Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Bump and Stacy
on Seattle Sports Station.
Powered by Kitsap Credit Union. Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Rost.
Here we go now.
A lot about the emotions surrounding this game tonight for the Mariners, but let's talk about the team with Shannon Dreher. Mariners insider Shannon Dreher joins us now on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. As a reminder, our conversation with Shannon Dreher is powered by Pacific Lamp and Supply. Shannon, I saw that you made a special purchase at the store today. What's going on?
Well, you know, I've seen videos of this stuff before, and I actually watched Yankees reporter Meredith, who does the TV interviews for them. She's so wonderful. I figured she knows how to do this, and by darn it, she had on a clear poncho, and there were goggles. She wasn't wearing them, but she had them, so I thought, I better go get these.
There you go.
In case.
Yes. Wise purchase.
Shannon, I cannot wait to see you in the poncho and glasses, goggles, excuse me, celebrating tonight. Please send
She's
pictures, post
She's out here getting
posted.
Those quotes. You know she is.
I
want to
see it. I want to see it. So you sound and look pretty confident that they're going to get it done tonight, and so did Service. You don't see a lot of coaches come out and say, this is what we're going to do, right? He didn't guarantee, but he says, look, this is what's going to happen tonight. Have you ever heard Service come out and be that forward when it comes to, I guess, game predictions?
You know, I think he did guarantee it. He said that they would clinch tonight. So, the drought ends tonight, he said. So, he did. I mean, I guess he's not guaranteeing the win, but he's guaranteeing either, you know, maybe the Baltimore people shouldn't be too happy about that. But, and then he kept going. And he put out there what Mitch Haniger has always said when you ask what his goal is. And he says very matter-of-factly, to win the World Series. Scott Service put that out there, too. And, you know, with him, I think timing is everything with the messaging. And I'm sure there was some thought that was put into it. And he saw enough the last 2 days that, yeah, they're back to the team that he thought they were and that we've seen for the majority of the year. And just giving that little bit of an extra push. It wasn't quite Lou Piniella back in 2001 walking through the hall and saying, we will bring this series back to Seattle. But it was, for Scott Service in particular, it was an eye-opener. And it was kind of fun when he doubled down on it.
Hey, speaking of Mitch Haniger, he had not one but two home runs last night. And Shannon, I've been operating under the assumption that he's just been kind of playing banged up for one reason or another through most of the season. Certainly in his return, he hasn't had it easy with injuries. Is your understanding that he is, for the most part, healthy right now, or at least in a good enough spot to really help this lineup in the postseason?
Yeah, I think he is. I mean, he had a good amount of time to recover, and I think honestly what we saw with him in this last stretch was something that we've seen from him in the past. He's streaky, and he talked about it before the game, and that when you kind of get on a little bit of a downward spiral, and Jared Kelnick's talked about this too, you start doing things physically that you're not aware that you're doing, and they turn into bad habits, and all of a sudden you're light years away from what you were before, but you don't know it because it was gradual in getting to it, and that's what new normal feels like. And he kind of isolated that over the last few days, and what we saw last night, I don't know if you were listening to the post-game show. I never make predictions, as you probably know. I don't like to make predictions because I don't like to be wrong. And this is baseball. And we have a picks versus Rick segment. And early on in the roundtable segment, we were talking about Mitch. And I said, I'm just going to throw this out here. He looked more relaxed in the clubhouse than I've seen him in 2 weeks. And he looked, you know, he was wearing it, as they would say, last week in Kansas City. And it was not good. He did not look good behind the scenes. Saw something totally different today. I know he took some extra work a couple of days ago, and you've seen the progression. And I said, if you're looking for a pick, I'm just throwing out there. I think Mitch Haniger could be big tonight. And what do you know, Mitch Haniger goes out there. And that, to me, with what he said, what we saw, and just physically what he looked like, I think he knows he's back.
Shannon, you're hesitant to make predictions, but it sounds like you're like an actual prophet. I feel like you should lean into it.
Well, we only talk about the ones I get right, Stacey.
Okay,
the other
good point, good
happen.
Point. Very good point.
You talk about Mitch being relaxed. A young man who never looks relaxed to me is obviously JK, but he performed last night. What are you seeing? Because it's not, he doesn't wear it. You can't tell that he's feeling good. He's in a good place. Is there anything you're seeing at his approach at the plate, in the dugout? And give us some insight.
Yeah, well, I think you see it more with him when he's not going right. I mean, he runs at an intense level to start with, and he always has, and that's okay if you can manage that. But I think we've seen him far too many times get probably too emotional out there. And, you know, that can be bad for if it's a situation with an umpire and you're not getting the calls, or you hurt the team and you get kicked out of a game, or you're just kind of that dark cloud in the corner of the clubhouse or the dugout. That can impact the team, too. Not that that happened too often, but any player can have that impact. I think what we're seeing right now at the plate, and I think it's also part of his approach, is he's just so much calmer. He is so much cleaner in his mechanics. He's cut down on the big leg kick. He's not moving as much when he gets up there. He seems to have more confidence in what he is doing, you know, physically and on the mental side as well. He has changed his approach. And rather than, for me, in looking at him and in putting it in the simplest of terms, as I did with Mitch Haniger when he just looked right and looked more relaxed yesterday, for me, for the majority of the time that Jared Kelnick has been up at the big league level, both this year, both last year, he's looked like he has been chasing it. There's so much that he wants to be. And I don't see that anymore. For the first time, it looks like he's letting the game come to him. And along those lines, not doing too much. And really understanding the value of handing that at bat off to the next hitter, and along with making some mechanical adjustments, seeing more pitches, understanding how he's being approached by the pitcher better. I think now he's handling pitches that he hasn't handled before. I mean, that the oppo shot last night off the end of the bat was remarkable that he did that. We're seeing him with some success on breaking balls and off speed pitches so far. I believe he's been on base in every game that he's been back up. I think he had a walk in the one game that he didn't have a hit. So this looks very, very good, and I think it's probably comforting to him to know that he had, you know, one of his greatest month last month was September. So I think he feels very comfortable where he is right now.
Good seeing JP with that late RBI yesterday. Also had a pretty good day defensively, but in his last seven, he's slashing 167, 375, 167. Hasn't had a great 30 days with just a 204 average. I know that that average, as it does with any player, never tells the whole story, but what's he been struggling with? Is it bad luck? Is it injury?
Well, he's incredibly banged up. When you have the list of players that are banged up, probably Cal Raleigh is right up at the top, and then you've got Ty France and J.P. Crawford. And you don't see it because they get out there every day, but we see these guys behind the scenes, and we see the treatment that they're taking. And, you know, I know that J.P. has been dealing with stuff for months now from what we have seen him in the clubhouse with the different kind of machines that he has on and having to get early to the park to get things done. The same with Ty France. So, yeah, he's been incredibly banged up. The one thing that I like, and it kind of goes back to what Jared Kelnick is doing right now, is he can't try and do too much. He has to be able to just kind of focus on what he can do, and what we have seen from him this year, and particularly in the last couple of months that has been of good use, is he's getting on base. You mentioned the 375 on base percentage. That is significant. He's not a guy that's going to strike out a lot. He's not a guy that's going to hit into double plays. Yes, you would like to see him make contact and do more damage that way, but even when he is in his worst struggles, and we've seen it here and there this year, as long as he can get those walks and not be striking out, he's helping.
Shannon, obviously these guys have put two games together, 10-9 win, 3-1 win. Is it as simple as just getting into the postseason, or do you feel like they need to be playing at a certain level to ride some momentum getting in?
Yeah, I do, and I've felt that. That's been my fear, and it was my fear when I saw the schedule. And, oh, easy teams. Well, you know, I've covered a team that was one of those easy teams for many, many years, and I saw actually a good number of wins in September. And there's reasons for that, and I think we just saw that. I also think that they got hit hard and kind of just maybe back on their heels or not knowing that they would encounter this, but they've never been here before. They've never been within 3 weeks, within 2 weeks of a postseason. And I think some things happened along those lines, too, that kind of played with them and got them off their game. But I think it is most important that they get back to clicking on all cylinders. We're starting to see kind of glimpses of that. You feel better with what you're seeing at the plate. Still can clean things up defensively. They've got to stay consistent with that because you're not going to have a lot of 8-run games in the postseason. You're going to need to be saving runs as well. Cross your fingers that what we saw with the bullpen yesterday was an anomaly. Yeah. The day before, it was phenomenal. I think they got 9 outs on 23 pitches. But yeah, I think momentum is a big thing for this team. And I am, you know, a little cautious. They have not really faced the top tier pitching for a while. And in some ways, that's good. They seem to lock in more. You hear Scott Servais talk about, you know, they were better with their approaches against some of the top end pitching. And that's all they're going to see when they get there. But it's been a good 3 weeks, really, before they've seen that. So I think momentum and just this is not a time to kind of sit back, relax, and try and feel better.
All right. Run us through some of the playoff situations right now. Not actual scenarios, but there's a chance the Mariners could clinch a spot before they even play or before the game is over. And then are all three wildcard spots still available? Are the Mariners mostly looking at six? What's going on with either of these scenarios here?
You know, the wild card situation is pretty amazing, and it's amazing that it's been the same three teams. I know Baltimore's been back there, but they've really never threatened, especially since the Mariners have held that tiebreaker. So, you know, they lose today, and it's all over. The Mariners could clinch, you know, during the game. So that I almost hope that Baltimore wins and the Mariners win so they can, you know, celebrate the way that I think everybody wants to see them. And if they, you know, we'll see what happens, but I'm hoping that regardless, there's a Mariners win, and it would be a lot more fun if it was one that they actually had to win, which is not a situation that we have seen very often. But looking at that wild card situation, the thing that is so interesting with it is they have stuck together. There's been a little bit of jockeying for position here and there, but right now the Blue Jays are at the top of two. The Mariners are in the second spot, a half game back, and Tampa is a half game behind the Mariners. So the Mariners hold the tiebreaker with Toronto. So they just have to catch them. They do not hold that tiebreaker with Tampa. You really don't want to play at Tampa for competitive reasons. And at this point, with what's going on in Florida right now, I'm assuming those games are going to be held in Tampa, but that's going to be a tough situation. Regardless, if you go there, Blue Jays are a tough matchup as well, but they have the success from earlier in the season over there. And the Blue Jays are going to be in the position if they lose another game and they're trying to fight for, they're kind of in a position where, and Gary Hill has broken this down very well, they've said that they're going to go for it. They want home field advantage, but they may have to burn their top pitcher to get there. And if that's the case, if the Mariners roll into town and they're without Manoah, that's a plus for the Mariners, because the Mariners, if they run everything out right now, can line up the pitching the way that they want it, and they have options. We're still arguing over who pitches game three, so they are in good shape with the pitching. But I think everybody in their heart of hearts obviously wants them to take over that top spot and guarantee those games at T-Mobile Park. You know, it's great to make it, but the fans want to be there for these postseason games. And, you know, if all goes to plan, there will be a division series, an ALCS, and a World Series. So those options and those opportunities are there. But they are going to play it out, and they're also, the Mariners are also going to, you know, continue to battle for that top spot.
Shannon, we've had a lot of people text in sharing their stories about their relationship with the Mariners and how long it's been and what has happened in between playoff appearances. What's your relationship with the Mariners? What does this mean to you? I know you cover the team, but just as a fan and as someone who's watched this team during the ups and downs, what is this moment like for you?
You know, I've really been touched by everything that we've been seeing on Twitter, and it just so reinforces my love of baseball. So many of the people are talking about the memories that they have with their dads, their moms, their grandmothers, their grandfathers, and, you know, some are not here anymore. And it just kind of really kind of speaks to your soul, and that this is what baseball is about, that it is passed down. The love of the game is passed down usually through family. And for me to see so many people sharing those stories, and we heard the same thing with the Cubs, and we heard the same thing with the Red Sox. It's, you know, it's a special thing for me because baseball is such a big part of my life. As far as the Mariners go, I started covering them on an on and off basis in 1998. So it's been a long time, and watching so many people come through and try and do this. I started traveling with them in 2003. And for me, you try and separate yourself as a reporter. You try and take that fan out, but how can you not be fans of the fans and want this for them? And how can you not be fans of the good people that you have seen work so hard to get to this point? And, you know, on the field, off the field, it's impossible not to get excited for everybody right now. So, you know, I think my emotions are in check that way. And I think it's just like those last 3 weeks when the Mariners didn't know what hit them. It very well could hit me too. And that this is just such a special thing. But for me, the biggest thing is, you know, those guys down on the field, I am thrilled for them. you know, this is the group. It's going to be the Cal Raleighs and the Julio Rodriguez's and the Ty Frances and the Eugenio Suarez's that people talk about for years because they broke that streak. And I'm in Scott Servais and Jerry DePoto as well, and how they got them there. And for me, I'm thrilled that this is, going to be a major story in the history of this organization and this city. And these are the guys that did it, and they'll enjoy that.
Very cool to think of it that way. She is Mariners insider Shannon Dreher. Shannon, have fun tonight. Bring those goggles. Bring the poncho. Be careful.
I'll let you guys know that we're going to be handling the postgame show a little bit differently. Usually, if they win, we get just one walk-off interview. I will be doing interviews in the clubhouse afterwards. So we'll have complete live coverage from the clubhouse following the game.
You guys are going to want to hear that. That'll be on Seattle Sports Station. So right here, after the game ends, take a listen to Shannon getting all those great interviews. Shannon, thanks so much.
You got it, guys.
All right, this hour of Bump and Stacey is brought to you by Advanced Hair Restoration. It is Football Friday, powered by the Snoqualmie Casino Sportsbook. So let's get to Four Down Territory.
This is Four Down Territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass. Going inside the game with former Seahawks and Coug wide receiver Michael Bumpus.
First down, Bump. Now, this may sound simple, but it is not. What is something the Seahawks need to improve on defensively?
Basic football, Stacey.
Basic football.
Angles when you tackle, when you are approaching a ball carrier. There are several times where I'm watching film where I'm like, this is a horrible angle being taken by this football player. Say they're doing an outside zone. The running back is getting to the sideline. He's running to the defense's right, his left. You want to get to that right hip. You want to make it so that there's no cutback lane. Too many times I've seen guys over pursue. That means your angle is on top of the player instead of to that hip, and then he cuts back. Or angles when you're attacking the football out the air. Too many times I've seen guys go underneath instead of attacking and staying over the top. I'm watching film and I'm like, man, if these guys just switch their angles up a little bit, they will put themselves in position to make more plays. And that's what I guess is kind of frustrating, because you see guys in position to do that, but just the little things. Man, I've coached high school football for 10 years. That's stuff we do day one. These are the pursuit angles you take. This is how you attack a football out the air. So these guys are great athletes. I think now if they just hone in on the little things, fix your angles, you'll be in position to at least slow guys up, then the rest of your boys will come in and clean it up.
Is that just a youth thing, or sometimes do you need to change up the way you might have those angles if it's a different scheme?
No, I think it's guys just being super excited and being in that moment and just forgetting to do the little things. I've seen veterans do it, so I can't just say it's a youth thing. I think it's just a team thing at this point.
Second down. What stat is an indication that the Seahawks offense is more than capable of sustaining long drives?
I saw this stat and I could not believe it. I was like, this is not the Seattle Seahawks. These guys are converting 48% on third downs. That is third in the NFL.
Yeah, consider that at their worst, they were, what, 30-something?
Not good.
Six. Not good. 33? Horrible.
Yeah.
Horrible.
And it's impressive. And what that tells me is that they've gotten themselves some third and short a lot of the time, or that Geno is capable of converting on third downs. I see that and I say, okay, that's why we saw 11 play drives, 12 play drives. Last week, I believe, what team were we talking about? Me and Nass did a podcast yesterday. I think it was the Arizona Cardinals. They had drives of 17 plays, 16 plays, 19 plays. So when you're doing that, that means you're having success on third down. And this team has shown that they're great on third downs right now, so keep that going. If you convert on third downs, you keep those drives going, you at least put yourself in position to get 3 points on the board.
Third down. All right, Daryl Taylor, a former second-round pick for the Seattle Seahawks, very talented out of Tennessee, but the Seahawks maybe not getting the absolute most out of him. So how do they do it?
What they do is they put him in position to be the player that he is, and he is a guy who loves to get after the quarterback. So what I think of Daryl Taylor, I think line him up in a wide nine technique. That means if he was on the left side and that right tackle was there, instead of him being in a five technique, which is like right on his shoulder, wide him up a bit more so he can attack the offensive tackle. He's
all
good.
The way on the edge is all what Bump is saying.
Get wide.
Super wide.
And let him get his momentum going and attack this guy, because I've seen him in space. He has great feet, great hands. He can move the tackle. He's almost becomes a receiver against a DB. Like when a receiver has space, if you you give me 3 or 4 yards to attack you, I can set you up even more. Now, if you're up against me, I can still attack you, but there's less space for me to influence you. I think if he has space, he can influence that offensive tackle and then put him in where you want him to get after the quarterback and not contain and not set an edge, a third and long, second and long, where you feel like they're going to throw the football. Daryl Taylor, he needs to get going. I think he can get going.
Yeah.
That's how I would do it.
Fourth down. All right, Scott Service is out here ensuring and promising victories for the Mariners. So let's get some confidence for the Seahawks here. How can the Seahawks offense ensure a victory on Sunday against the Lions?
I asked you how to spell this word before the show.
I was wondering why you were asking
me.
Is he tweeting it out?
You have to crescendo. It has to be a gradual rise when it comes to this offensive production, right? You can start off hot. I'm with that. But that means we have to get hotter. You have to keep going. You have to keep producing it. A lot of times we're watching this offense go, and they come out hot. Then boom, then they slow down. Then the play happens, then they slow down. I just want to see a steady increase of production. And if you start out hot, finish even hotter, and put yourself in position to make the plays at the end of the game. And I think that they can do that, man. They got all the weapons on offense. You got a quarterback who's playing well. But it's all about sustaining. Why we want to sustain those drives? We want to keep putting points on the board, right? If you have 4 drives, you got to get points at least 3 of them. You got 12 drives, you want to get points in at least 7 to 8 of them. Now, that's ambitious, right? That means you're scoring like 30-something points a game. But look, you're playing the Detroit Lions. They're going to give you 30 points a game if you do it right. So just steady. You got to crescendo that thing.
I like it. Well, and I also like the idea of building throughout the course of the game, because what we've seen is starting out pretty hot, keeping it steady, looking great, converting, doing great, second half hits, field goal. You know what I mean? Like, I would like to see, I think, as another point of development, not only sustaining the third down, sustaining those drives, sustaining all that great offensive production, especially in the past game they've been doing, but a few more carries for Rashad Penny.
Yeah.
The Detroit Lions defense struggled against Dalvin Cook and Alexander Mattison last week, had 9 missed tackles against the run. But also, maybe find the end zone in the second half. I honestly think even one trip to the end zone would be progress for this team. 10 points in the second half, take it.
Take it.
I'll absolutely take
keep
it.
Keep putting points on the board and keep applying pressure. Say you go on a drive and you don't get points. Well, let's go on 10, 11 plays. Let's chew up some clock. You know, let's influence the game that way. But it's all about points, man. Let's keep it going.
All right. Quick Sunday programming note. Obviously, we aren't going to be live on air, but I know many of you also tune in to hear the Seahawks pre and post, the Seahawks play-by-play, and the Mariners. So this is what you need to know. The Seahawks post-game show, hosted by Michael Bumpus, will air exclusively on 97.3 FM. The Mariners game will air on 710 following the Seahawks' final whistle. So if you're tuned in for the Seahawks and you want to hear the Mariners, you don't need to swap stations. Just stay exactly where you are. If you want to catch the Seahawks post game for a little bit, you got to switch over to 97.3 Cairo FM. All right, it's Bump and Stacey. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710 and the Seattle Sports app. Coming up in the timeline, one story was dominating our timelines last night, and I'm not done talking about it. That's next.
This is The Timeline
with Bump and Stacey,
brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
It is The Timeline on Bump and Stacey, reading you the top stories you're going to see on your own timeline. But one story dominated our timelines last night. It was one of an injury to Tua Tagovailoa, who was not only stretchered off the field last night, but taken by ambulance to a local hospital, an E1 trauma center, after sustaining head and neck injuries during the game. Now, obviously, this is scary. No one likes to see it. But why was everyone talking about it? It wasn't just wishing Tua well. It was stemming from controversy from week 3, when in a game between the Bills and Dolphins, Tua took a hard hit, landed on his head on the ground, stood up, bump, you saw it, had trouble walking, needed help from an offensive lineman to stand up straight. He left to go through concussion protocol and then re-entered the game in the second half, meaning he cleared concussion protocol. But a lot of people weren't buying it. So people were naturally saying, All right. You know, maybe you think he cleared concussion protocol, but he better not get hurt on Thursday. And he did. Thankfully, the Dolphins have said that Tua's okay. He's in good spirits. He has movement in all of his extremities. Not only that, but he was able to fly back with the team that night. So all of that is good news. But, Bump, this could have been bad.
Could have been a whole lot worse, man. He's playing football 4 days after the dude clearly had a concussion. You don't get the wobbly legs and disoriented on accident. You don't get that after. Well, you get that after slamming your head into the ground. Your head slammed into the ground.
They tried to say it was a lower back injury.
Lower back might, you know what? You know what I'm saying? Like, they're just, this is where football gets a little suspect.
Mm-hmm.
Because teams will do whatever they can to win games. This is a 3-0 football team. Their offense is playing at a high level. So selfishly, they're like, all right, let's keep this young man out as long as we can. And then Tua being a football player, he's not going to pull himself out. That's just how we're made up. That's just how we do things. So it's on the team to do what's best for the individual and not what's best for your team at this point. They are extremely lucky.
Yeah.
Nothing more happened to this dude.
Well, and again, if you, so is it called second impact syndrome? I don't know what it is. I'm not a doctor, but there's, if you have a concussion and then you suffer another traumatic brain injury or get a concussion, you could potentially die. Like, you risk actual death, but also not only that, but just a severe brain injury and other injuries. When Tua went down and you saw the fencing position, which is when his hands automatically sprawl out, you can see them kind of not even just go very stick straight, and it looks like they're pinched. It's called fencing position, which is when you have a traumatic brain injury or a spinal injury. I mean, that's automatically the sign of a concussion. It's, there's no way they can play him. I mean, you can say he'll clear protocol, but it looks bad, certainly, to play him in this upcoming Week 5 game. Plenty of people wondering whether he should have played at all, and it's not just people on Twitter. I mean, you have Kimberly A. Martin, who is an NFL reporter, was at the Ravens press conference today where head coach John Harbaugh said that he was, quote, astonished by what he saw last night with Tua, but also couldn't believe he saw what he saw last week either. And I feel like that's kind of hinting. A coach is never going to throw another coach under the bus, but kind of hinting like, yeah, surprised to see him out there. I mean, I think that the rest of the NFL world is not buying what the NFL and what the Dolphins are selling in terms of saying, ah, Tua just had some lower leg. He felt like Gumby out there with his legs.
As a coach, you know. You've been around the game enough to be like, man, I don't care what these doctors say or what's going on with him. He don't need to be out there. Sit him.
Yeah. And so what you guys need to know and where this is going is the NFL, immediately after Tua was injured in Week 3, against the Bills, said, you know, we're going to look into this. We're going to have an investigation, an internal investigation. They determined that concussion protocol was followed. Okay. And that if concussion protocol is followed and Tua passes, he can reenter the game. We can't keep him out of it if he passes concussion protocol. The NFLPA, which is the Players Association, are doing their own probe, and we're already doing their own probe into whether or not concussion protocol was actually followed. Their results hadn't come out yet at the time that Tua was injured last night. Now, this morning, the NFLPA says it will, quote, pursue every legal option as it investigates whether Tua Tagovailoa should have played on Thursday night. Now, there is a world where Tua didn't suffer a concussion in Week 3 and just happened to get a concussion in Week 4. Like, there's a world where that happens and where that's possible. It's just that the weight and severity of that not being true and him being concussed is a serious, like, you're looking at legal ramifications.
Yeah, for sure. And you know what? This is a word that's been used a lot over the past few years. Optics, right?
Yeah.
What does it look like? If something looks a little shady, you better make sure that you're doing everything you can to convince your organization, your team, his wife, the parents, that you have his best interest in mind. It just looks extremely bad. Anyone who's played any level of football knows wobbly legs, head hit the ground, probably concussed, needs to sit out at least a week and get reevaluated. 4 days afterwards, that guy's playing football in the National Football League with grown men. It's ridiculous.
Well, and it's just, again, like, do you trust the NFL to say, hey, we figured out that, you know, our own investigation into our league determined that our concussion protocol was followed?
Right.
Like, I know NFL.
I don't trust them.
The NFL is deeply invested in the success of its own product, as are all of us. I mean, all of us are football fans. That being said, the NFL really only came to more openly care about head injuries and concussions when it became clear that it was affecting their product.
Yeah.
So A business is a business.
When people started caring about it, right? When people started voicing their opinions, and once we were exposed to more data and research, the NFL's like, all right, now we have to change something. So apply pressure. The powers that be, apply pressure to the NFL and make them get this right.
Let's see. Mike McDaniel in a press conference earlier today said that it's good Tua, quote, doesn't have anything more serious than a concussion. Now, doctor who's a he's a neuroscientist who's followed by a lot of sports folks because he specializes in specifically with concussion stuff. He says, I don't think this guy gets it. A concussion is a traumatic brain injury, and posturing suggests brainstem injury. It's pretty high on the list of serious medical consequences of football. I do think we talk about concussions. It's always like, oh, okay, he's concussed. Like, he'll pass protocol and get back in. But there are instances where this is a much that's a serious injury in itself. Like, a concussion is a brain injury. It's a traumatic brain injury.
It's more serious than breaking your leg, man.
I know. Jeff Schwartz, former offensive lineman, says, I've had teammates who are fine after games, but then develop concussion symptoms a day or days later. Players can pass concussion tests while concussed. The issue continues to be the video evidence of Tua wobbling on the field, shaking his head. He never once grabbed his back. That's also really important, right? Like, when you are watching Tua, I know a lot of you haven't seen the footage. He reaches up for his head. He looks drunk. He doesn't look like someone with a back injury who can't walk, and he leans over and grabs his back or falls to his knees. He looks like he can't walk in a straight line, and he reaches up for his head.
Yeah. First thing you do when you're injured, you grab that part that is injured, that is hurting. That's exactly what he did. It's just irresponsible, man. Like, this multi-billion dollar company, which is the NFL, this shield, has the resources and the capabilities to take extreme care of the people who make them the most money, which are the quarterbacks. So it's a gift and a curse. That's why they kept him in there, because he's a quarterback. We need them. We're winning right now. He's one of the faces of the league. Like, just do better, man. And I hope the NFLPA, I hope they do their research, which they are doing, and they come to a conclusion and hold the NFL accountable. Because that's the thing. Who holds the NFL accountable?
Nobody.
It's nothing but the owners in a room. There's 32 of these guys in a room who hold themselves accountable, and they've shown over and over and over again they're not capable of doing that.
Well, and what you end up doing is pointing to someone like Mike McDaniel or the Dolphins medical staff, which, yes, if Tua was concussed, and they should have been, had if he cleared concussion protocol during the game, great. But given the symptoms, given the behavior we saw from Tua on video, that's something where you say, we're going to continue to track this over the course of the week. So, yeah, you can point to them and say that there's liability there and real responsibility there. But make no mistake, that is a byproduct of the culture of the NFL. And not only that, but the culture the NFL has continued to support. All right, you guys, we got a couple things coming up here. We are going to get back to the Mariners. Don't worry. And instead, we normally do bold takes, Seahawks edition for the Seahawks game. I got another idea, though, Bump.
What's that?
I say we go bold takes. Real bold.
Real bold.
Mariners edition.
All right.
So get your Mariners bold takes in now. 866-979-3776. Text the Mac and Jacks text line 866-979-3776. That's next.
It's time for Bold Take Friday.
It is Bold Take Friday. Get ready with your boldest takes about the Mariners. No Seahawks today. Mariners about to play the A's later today with a chance to clinch a wild card spot. Now, if the Orioles fall to the Yankees earlier today, first pitch for that game is 4:30, then the Mariners are in. That could happen sometime early in the game, potentially even before the game. If the Orioles win, the Mariners, all they need to do is win. One and in. One is your magic number. So get your bold takes in. We're going to have fun with this one. What do you think is going to happen tonight? I want to hear your boldest Mariners take. And I've got a couple in here that are bold Mariners takes for the remainder of the regular and postseason. So I'll allow that as well. Bump, what is yours? And then I'll hit the texters here, and then I'll have mine.
My bold take is...
Oh, not to interrupt, but if
but
Curtis...
But you did interrupt.
I know, but I got to tell people, if Curtis thinks your take is... If Curtis thinks your take is bold enough, you're going to get one of these. Okay. I got to remind people so that they aren't scared when they hear the horn if they're driving.
What is that?
And remember, if you complain about the horn on the Mac and Jack's text line, it only makes me want to give the horn more.
Yeah, okay, sorry, Bump. Continue.
More horn.
I can't have people scared when they're driving.
My bold take is at Jake Hagel's yard again tonight.
Three home runs
goes
in 2 days.
Yard. The young man is in the zone. It might be an angry-looking zone, but whatever zone it is, I'm feeling the kid. I like his approach. I saw a smirk yesterday, and I saw bleached tips. Brought me back to, like, 2003, like,
yeah.
NSYNC and stuff. You
Isn't
know what I'm saying?
Funny how young people, like Gen Z now, are doing everything we did as kids, which is probably what our parents felt about us doing everything they did
when
as
you were
kids.
Young, did there was a moment when bell bottoms were in.
Oh, they're back, man.
They're back.
They're not bell bottoms, but flare jeans. I would, 10 years ago, if you were like, hey, get a pair of straight leg jeans, I'd be like, absolutely not. Are you insane? I will tuck my skinny jeans into my Uggs. Thank you. Now, all about it. I like that one. I like that one. Three home runs for JK in 2 days. Really awesome here. Curtis, you're getting one complaint about the horn. Not more than that, just one. So I think that's already one too many. See, you stop complaining. It's only going to make it worse. All right. I got a couple bold takes here from listeners. Mariners, bold take. I won't bawl my eyes out when they clinch. I don't know about that one. I think we're Curtis knows.
Look,
Curtis, you already know you're going to do it. We know we're all going to do it.
Emotions you haven't felt in quite some time, Dexter. That's just the fact of the matter here.
That might be the boldest take of the day. From the 360, bold take, complete game, no hitter for Logan Gilbert. He's going to be amped for the postseason and bringing the intensity, hashtag bold take. So few guys pitch, well, first of all, no hitters, but complete games now. You think there's a chance that this close to the postseason when he's such an important arm
Heck
service
no.
lets him play? Okay, because that's what I was going to say.
Hey, put him around 85 pitches, 90, get him out of there.
Yeah. Bold take from the 760. I pop a bottle of champagne tonight to celebrate. Spray the entire living room. Wife gets mad. Dog gets drunk licking off the floor. I'm divorced on Monday. Go M's, baby. Refuse to lose. All right, another bold take in here. The Mariners advance to the ALDS and take it to the final game. You guys...
What, so they're saying a Game 5 loss in the ALDS?
Yeah, but I know...
That's not fun.
I know that that doesn't seem fun. I know it doesn't seem fun. I do think that that potentially could exceed some of the expectations of certainly national critics. Like, I would say it's not the boldest take, but it is a... It is still an optimistic take, not overly optimistic, but that's kind of the route that I see them potentially going. Like I would freak out if there was an ALCS appearance. I think they're good enough to get through the wild card.
Yeah.
I do wonder about their performance. I know they've beaten the Yankees, but I wonder about their performance against Houston, against New York.
It's the great thing about the playoffs, though. Get in. You never know. You never know. But, yeah, chances are.
I know. Now, Curtis, this one requires you explaining the wild card situations right now. Bold take from a listener. The Mariners will sweep the Jays in the wild card round in Seattle.
All right. We're going to be a horn because... That would mean the Mariners would have to overtake Toronto, who is currently, I believe, a game and a half up on the Mariners for the top wild card spot. So you're talking about them having a really good finish to the regular season. You pretty much have to win out in order for that to happen, which, look, the Mariners have gotten hot at times. And then Toronto would then have to fall all the way down to the sixth seed, which they have a two-game lead over Tampa. If that happens, then you've got the Blue Jays playing really bad ball going into the wild card round. You host the Blue Jays for four games. Could you imagine the crowds at that game? How packed the stands already get when when the Blue Jays are in town? Like, that would be an atmosphere that would be absurd. I would be here for it.
Electric.
It would be incredible. But boy, I would love for the Mariners to kind of avoid Toronto at all costs before.
It would be wonderful. Yeah. From the 206, obviously the boldest take, a.k.a. the boldest whole cake, that's what this listener says, is that the Mariners are going to win the World Series.
The boldest of the bold.
Guys, come on. We're getting reckless with that one.
You asked for it.
You're right. That is technically the boldest bold take you could have.
It is.
They're going to win the World
Series.
The
heart of Bold Take Friday is some recklessness.
You're right. You're absolutely right. If your takes aren't reckless, you didn't play right. You aren't doing it right.
You're not playing to win.
No, absolutely not. What's the playoff situation where they would face the Yankees. What seeding would it they have to have? I would much rather see this matchup against the Yankees than the Astros.
Yeah, it would go. You'd want the sixth seed because then you'd face Cleveland in the wild card round, and then the winner of that series would face New York in the division series. That would be the only way the Mariners could face New York in the division series. So if they are the four seed or the five seed and they win that round, then you would face Houston in the division series, which we kind of know how Houston is. Maybe the familiarity of the Mariners in Houston, it helps them out and maybe gives them an edge, but like, I would love to avoid the Astros.
Yeah. I did not have a lot of time for Bold Take. I'll throw one randomly in here. Lineups aren't out, correct? Are not?
Correct. Okay. Not out.
Then I'm going to say that, let's see. The Jesse Winker gets a home run.
That's sad that that's bold, man.
Okay. How about this? Jesse Winker goes 3-for-4. That's bold. With a home run. That's the second boldest take
talking.
To the World Series.
Now you're talking.
All right, we are taking you around the diamond thanks to Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business. Magic numbers at 1. That's all the Mariners need, just a win or an Orioles loss. The Mariners take on the A's tonight. First pitch is at 6:40 p.m. Pregame show starts at 5:30 right here on your home for the Mariners, Seattle Sports Station. And that's Around the Diamond brought to you by Shane Company. We're a bundle of emotions here at T-Mobile Park, getting back to some of your stories and ours about this team next.